Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hello, podheads. Welcome back to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. I'm your host for the day, Kylie Caldwell.
This is Kate Carter.
And I'm Holly Lamoureux.
I'm going to jump right in. Holly has tasked herself with trying to guess the case that we're doing today. Kate already knows, but we'll see how far into the introduction she can get.
Apparently, it's going to be shocking.
I hope so. So it's 10 p.m. on a hot Thursday night of May 3rd, 2007. A mother opened the bedroom door of the family's vacation villa to check on her three young kids. Holly's nodding her head.
Come on, Holly.
Got it. Okay, continue.
Yep. Sound familiar?
Little familiar.
She expected to find them, as they always were, asleep, but instead she finds an empty bed, an open window, and raised shutters. Her three-year-old daughter was gone, and all the mom could say was, "She's been taken." Those words would echo across continents, fuel theories and searches, even 19 years later. This is the story of the disappearance of Madeline McCann.
Truly can't believe that someone, one of us, is covering this case. It's so big. For anyone that's listening, if you don't know this case, you don't know true crime. I'm just throwing that out there.
I mean, you could have guessed when you clicked on the episode, but this will be part one of two. There's a lot.
I can't believe you're doing this one, Kylie. It's very unlike you.
I know it is. I'm excited.
So the disappearance of Madeline McCann is probably the most widely reported missing children's case. I'm sure you all at least know the name and the key points. Probably have seen the Netflix documentary series, but I really wanted to do a deep dive. Get into the timeline, the complicated investigation, the theories and conspiracies, controversies, and where the case stands today. Before we get into all that, we need to paint a picture of the McCann family. Their background does feed into some of these theories and conspiracies we'll talk about later. So we'll start with Madeline herself, who was born on May 12th, 2003, to parents Jerry and Kate. Both of Madeline's parents are doctors, with their mom Kate being a general practitioner and dad Jerry being a cardiologist. Their careers and medical expertise does come up a bit in alternate theories, but along with Madeline, the couple welcomed twins in 2005, a boy and a girl, but we won't be discussing them much, if at all. So we'll get into the Portugal vacation. I don't know why, but I was always under the impression that the McCann family vacation with friends was like a regular yearly thing, but I was wrong. This vacation, or holiday as they call it, was basically an adult and family spring break with seven close friends and their kids. In all, there were nine adults and eight kids in the group. We have Matthew and Rachel Oldfield, Russell O'Brien and Jane Tanner, David and Fiona Payne, and Fiona's mom, Diane Webster, along with all of their kids. Obviously, this was supposed to be a fun week-long getaway booked through a travel company. Everything would be taken care of. Every family would have their own little apartment in this complex that had a pool, tennis courts, restaurants, and a bar. So while technically the Ocean Club Resort was what we would consider an apartment complex, it mainly was used as vacation rentals. The apartments were privately owned, but the travel company used would rent from them frequently. It was in this neighborhood of Praia de Luz that was nicknamed Little Britain because of how many British people owned properties or vacationed there. It's a small, safe town on the very bottom of Portugal. When I say small, I mean it. They have a population of like 3,000 people. But back to this Ocean Club Resort, because the layout is very important to understanding what went down. There's two large buildings beside each other with balconies overlooking a large adult pool with a smaller children's pool behind the further building. On the other side of the pool was the infamous Tapas restaurant. there isn't much distance between all these places. You can clearly see the apartments from the pool and even from the restaurant. Now, the McCanns were in apartment 5A. So if you're facing the building from the pool, it's the one on the bottom right, closest to the public street. The old fields are right next door in 5B. Then we have Jane Tanner and Russell O'Brien in 5D, and the Payne family and mom Diane on the second floor, right above everyone else. Side note, if you go read about this case, it can be kind of confusing as an American. We're the odd ones out. Everyone else calls the first floor the ground floor. So what we would consider to be the second floor, that's the first floor. Found that out the hard way. Anyways, the McCann family arrived at the resort on April 28th, 2007, and the vacation was pretty uneventful. Good, but uneventful. No drama, nothing stuck out. Everyone would spend their days hanging out by the pool, playing tennis, and then at night, all the kids would be put to bed, and the adults would meet up and hang out at the tapas restaurant across the pool, which is about 165 feet or 50 meters from the rooms. The group had a system each night while they're hanging out and drinking at the restaurant. Every 20 to 30 minutes, one person would go check on the kids back in their rooms. And the system has obviously raised a lot of questions. How could you leave these children alone at night in a place you've never been before in a foreign country? And I'm not a parent. I'm going to call Kate in on this one. I see why people are critical, but on the other hand, it was 2007. The kids are 165 feet away, and they're checking in on them every 20 to 30 minutes. I don't think it's that crazy.
Parent perspective of two coming in. I will say I've thought about this case a lot, obviously, and especially now that I have like girls of my own. I totally don't think they were in the wrong at all. We were almost 20 years ago. So what I know now today compared to 20 years ago is crazy different in how the world treats like this type of stuff. You know, it used to be acceptable to put your kids down in a hotel room, have a baby monitor and leave the hotel room. Now you'll have CPS called on you if someone even thinks that you're doing that. You know what? I don't know. It's really hard to say now what I would be doing because we know so much, but I truly don't think they were in the wrong. I really don't. Especially because they were checking in. They probably had, I don't think this was ever mentioned anywhere, but I bet you they had a sound baby monitor of some sort or something like that, you know, like.
I don't think they did.
Okay.
Okay, I can't remember how far away you said it was,
So
but
close.
could they see? Like,
If they were looking at, they could see the door from the pool, but
okay,
now.
I feel like I heard someone say that at one point talking about this case. Like, they could literally, like, it's not like they could see the kids in the room, obviously, because,
No.
like, you know, the door, whatever, but someone was like, they could see the building. Like, they were right beside the building. And, like, to me, I mean, again, I don't have kids, so I'm with
Right.
Kylie. I have to listen to Kate on this one, but I think that it would be fine with me. Maybe
Right.
depending on the country and like how safe the place was that we were staying. Yeah, if I felt safe there, I feel like that's totally something I would be okay with.
Let's
Yeah.
say you can see the door is locked, even if the door was around the corner, because it wasn't the pool around the corner.
We'll get into that because you couldn't see the door and the door was unlocked.
Okay, door should not be unlocked. That's a no. And you know what? I take back everything I might have just said. You have, if the door is locked, then more comfortable. If you can see the door, more comfortable. If there's a window, that window better be locked as well. But like there's things to hit or miss. I will say, giving the parents credit, it was 20 years ago, but I think I would need to be able to see the door.
Well, I mean, what if one of the kids like wandered out too? Like, lock the door.
The whole unlocked thing throws me for a loop.
So we'll get into it. So it's an apartment. There's a patio door, which in the patio would face the pool and the restaurant. And then
Right.
there's a front door that leads out to the other side of the building. The front door is locked. The patio door, which they were using to get into the apartment from the restaurant back and forth, that can only be locked from the inside.
Okay, so you keep it locked and go around every time. You know, like okay, I will say there's no way in hell I would leave a child in a room with the door unlocked.
Great point.
That part is a no-no. We have not come to a decision, but we have heard from the jury.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the day Madeline disappeared, May 3rd, 2007. It started out like every other day so far. All the kids started their day at the resort's children's club. The McCanns had lunch together in the apartment and followed that with a pool day. Around 6 p.m., Kate took the kids back to the apartment and got them ready for bed while Jerry had a tennis lesson. By 7, the kids are in bed and fast asleep with Madeline in her pink and white Eeyore pajamas. So like I mentioned earlier, apartment 5A had two bedrooms and two doors that led out. So directly to the right of the front door, which would lead out to the other side of the building opposite the pool, was the room the kids were sleeping in. Madeline specifically was in the single bed opposite the window that faced the street, and the twins were in travel cots between that bed and the other window. Kate and Jerry had been sleeping in the other bedroom that overlooked the pool, and beside that was the door that led out to the patio. So, like I said, you cannot see the window into the room the kids were sleeping in from the pool and restaurant. It's on the opposite side of the building. And from the restaurant, you also can't see the patio door because the patios are surrounded by a short wall. So it's like a little mini courtyard. So, like they had done every night, the adults met up at the Tapas restaurant for food and drinks around 8:30 p.m. They sat at the same table they always did, which the staff had reserved for them. Jerry was the first adult to go check on the kids, and this was at about 9:05 p.m., so only 35 minutes after getting to the restaurant. Jerry said all three of his kids were fast asleep. The only thing that, looking back on, was odd was that the kids' bedroom door was wide open. Jerry swears that when they had left the apartment earlier, he left the door slightly cracked. But at the time, he didn't think of anything of it. He cracked the door again and headed back to the restaurant. On the way back, he stopped and talked to another guy on vacation, and apparently at the same time, Jane Tanner, who's part of the group, was on her way to check on her own kid. And I say apparently because both Jerry and this other guy don't remember seeing her. And according to Jane's story, she would have passed Jerry, and there was only one route to take, which a really narrow path. But we'll get into Jane Tanner's story later. At 9:15 p.m., another adult in the group went to check on the kids. All was well. Kate McCann was planning on doing her rounds of checking at 9:30, but Matthew Oldfield offered to do so instead since he wanted to check on his own kids in the apartment next door. Matthew reported that the bedroom door where the McCann's kids was wide open. Remember, Jerry said it was open when he left, but he cracked it. Now, Matthew didn't look in the room. He just kind of waited for a second, didn't hear any rustling or kids being awake, so he left. 30 minutes later, at 10 p.m., Kate McCann entered the apartment to do what would be the final check. She entered the apartment through the unlocked patio door, and the bedroom door was wide open again. Kate goes to the bedroom to close the door, but it slammed shut out of nowhere. She opens it again and notices the one window and shutters were open. They created this draft that pulled the door closed. She glances over to the bed on the left and sees Madeline's stuffed cuddle cat and blanket, but no Madeline. Kate began to frantically search around the apartment, but there were no signs of her daughter. She ran as fast as she could back to the restaurant, screaming, quote, "Madeline's gone. Someone's taken her," end quote.
If you were in this situation and you walked into the room, and like I'm thinking about this as a mom as well, is that your first thought that someone's taking your child?
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
I think I would come to that after I had searched around the apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Searched around the apartment and potentially searched around the area. You know, like if your kid can open a door, they can be gone.
Immediately, the entire group started frantically searching, running around the resort, yelling Madeline's name. Matthew Oldfield was tasked with alerting the resort receptionist, who called the police and activated their missing child protocol. I will say the staff and the other guests at this resort, they were on it. Everyone pitched in and searched on foot until about 4:30 in the morning. The police, however, were a bit slow to get there. So two officers arrived at the resort at about 11:10 p.m., which was 40 minutes after getting the call from the receptionist. But the two officers that showed up were from the National Guard. They searched for about 50 minutes and then they called the criminal police. According to the police's report, they got to the resort in about 10 minutes, but everyone else disputes this, saying they didn't show up until after 1 a.m., over an hour after being summoned by the National Guard. And there were a lot of mistakes by the police during this initial search. Around 2 a.m., they deployed two patrol dogs, and at 8, four search and rescue dogs joined. Basically, the plan was just to walk around and yell Madeline's name because everyone just assumed she had wandered off. Which, I get it. It's more likely for a child to do just that. But in instances where foul play is involved, there's a lot more that needs to be done, and you've kind of just screwed the investigation. In this case, the police didn't release a description of Madeline to their version of Border Control and the Coast Guard until hours later. They didn't do house-to-house searches, like knocking on doors and asking people if they saw anything. They didn't even interview most of the people who were staying at the resort that night. The list of things keeps going, though. Roadblocks weren't set up until 10 a.m. the next day, and investigators never requested surveillance footage from the roads, which was monitored by a private company. This company, called Eurostar, told the Telegraph magazine back in 2007 they were never asked for the footage. Obviously, I tried to figure out if police got the footage later or what. Couldn't find a clear answer, so I don't know. I would assume and hope they would have the footage by now. But they haven't confirmed nor denied if they have the footage, so who knows? And I would also assume that if they did, at this point, they would have released it so the public could help identify a perpetrator. But who's to say? But let's get into reported sightings that were reported to police in the early hours and days of the search. After Madeline disappeared, Jane Tanner reported that she saw a man carrying a young child across the street when she had gone to check on the kids right after Jerry did. Remember, Jane went while Jerry was coming back, but Jerry and that guy he was talking to never saw Jane. So Jane also said that this child was wearing pink pajamas like Madeline had been wearing. When Madeline was reported missing, Jane gave a description of the sky, and a forensic artist created a drawing of what she saw. A white man, about 5 feet and 7 inches tall, in beige pants and a dark jacket. In the early days and chaos of this case, everyone was looking for this man, and he still comes up if you haven't heard any updates. Everyone assumed this man was carrying Madeline. But all the way in 2013, police determined that this was completely unrelated. They found the man. He was another British man on vacation at the resort, carrying his own daughter back to their room. And this is like confirmed to not have been Madeline. They had photos of his daughter in the pajamas she was wearing that night. They had the guy dress up like the sketch made from Jane's description and stand in the same pose. It was him and his daughter.
Kind of mind-blowing that it took 6 years. Was it 6 years?
13 minus 7 is, I don't know.
Six.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't do math here, but a little mind-blowing it took that long.
We do have another possible sighting for that night, but this wasn't reported to police until May 26th, so 23 days after it happened. Martin and Mary Smith, who were in the area on vacation from Ireland, reported that that night, around 10 p.m., they saw a man carrying a girl down a street about 500 yards from the apartment. The man was walking from that area and towards the beach. Martin and Mary described the man as a guy in his mid-30s, 5'7 to 5'9, slim build with short brown hair. According to them, he didn't look like a tourist and appeared to be uncomfortable carrying the girl. It didn't look like a dad carrying his sleeping kid home. The girl, by the way, they said was 3 to 4 years old, had blonde hair, pale skin, and was barefoot, wearing light-colored pajamas. So based on their descriptions, private investigators, not police, private investigators created e-fits for this guy. So an e-fit, imagine, you know, those like early 2000s cop shows, and they're like clicking through like these eyebrows, until the witness is like, oh, it's these ones. Yeah. And like for each body part or part of the face. So it's just like little stock images instead of being drawn.
Do you guys ever think about the fact, like, if you were involved in a case and they were trying to get a drawing or something, digital creation of the person you saw, how you would describe a human? Because I don't think I could do it.
Honestly, I don't think I could accurately describe you guys.
No.
Officer.
No. They'd be like, tell me about her nose. I'd be like, I don't know. A nose? Like, I would have to look at people online and try to, like, put things together.
I think they do that. Like, I think that they, like, may not be every sketch artist, but some of them, like, you flip through a thing and you're like, okay, this looked close to this nose, and they put it together into the face.
That sounds wonderful, because can you imagine just trying to draw something?
I mean, obviously it doesn't work very well. Look at the sketch that the sketches that we see.
Yeah. I still think about the leprechaun sketch, so.
That one's great.
We have other witness statements from locals and other people staying at the resort that weren't part of the group. There were reports of a man acting odd near the apartment a few days before Madeline went missing. There were also reports of a man asking people for money for an orphanage, which, by the way, did not exist. The begging and scams aren't the weird part. What is weird is the fact that the family who rented apartment 5A before the McCanns reported that they found a man on their patio, and when confronted, he started asking for money for this orphanage. On the day that Madeline disappeared, there were four reports of two black-haired men asking people for money for a hospice facility in or around the resort. There were also multiple reports of an ugly blonde man, and that's their words, not mine. Like, he's just apparently objectively ugly enough for it to be reported.
Wow, and that's kind of hurt, you know?
That's, like, not okay.
A little spoiler alert, we might know who ugly blonde man is in part two. And I will say he is ugly.
That's unfortunate.
So we don't know if this is all the same guy, but multiple people have shared stories of this ugly blonde man with very similar descriptions. The first spotting came on April 29th when he was seen near the Ocean Club. The next day, a blonde man was leaning against a wall behind the apartment. On May 2nd, he was seen across the road just staring directly at apartment 5A. The same day, he was seen again staring at the apartment, this time from the Tapas restaurant. On the day of Madeline's disappearance, May 3rd, a girl reported seeing a blonde man leave through a gate in the apartment below hers, which would be 5A. And at 2:30 p.m., two blonde men were spotted on the balcony of 5C, which was empty, so no reports of anyone staying there, having it booked. And sometime between 4 and 5 p.m. that afternoon, a blonde man was seen near apartment 5A again. An hour later, he was seen in the stairwell of the building. And then around 11 p.m., so after Madeline disappeared, two blonde men were seen arguing on a nearby street. And when they noticed they were being watched, the two guys stopped arguing and walked off. So, like I said, we have no idea who these people are or even if all these sightings are of the same guy. But it is something to note. Keep in the back of your mind. And obviously, these witness statements and sketches haven't helped much. It's been 19 years, and we don't know what happened to Madeline McCann. And you may be wondering, well, if they can't get anywhere with sketches, what about evidence from the apartment? Well, here's another big mistake. The crime scene was not secured. According to Mom Kate, the only area that was taped off was the bedroom that the kids were sleeping in. So the entire apartment was just open and available. And it wasn't until after 20 different people had entered it, did they tape it off. So this included adults in the group, staff at the resort, and investigators.
I've never seen one mistake happen so many times than crime scenes not being closed off in investigations. Like, what is the disconnect?
Should be your first thought.
If you report a kid being missing, are they automatically going to shut down everything, like, crime scene tape-wise, even if they think the kid ran off?
They should.
That's what I'm saying. They should. Yes. But that doesn't happen. You know, they're like, right. Oh, she's probably in the vicinity. Why would we need to tape off shit and make a big deal about it? You know?
Right. I feel like it's just universal. Like,
no, it should.
I know you're with me. I'm just saying, like, reiterating, this should be like interview question number one. What do you do in this situation? Like, what is this?
Yeah. Tape off the crime scene and don't take a polygraph. Okay, people.
Yeah. So we're adding it to the Over My Dead Pod rule book.
Yep.
Also, according to police reports, the officer who dusted outside that open window in the bedroom for fingerprints did not wear gloves or protective clothing, like those little white plastic suits that are so fashionable. And I don't know if they were able to get any fingerprints or how reliable any of that would be, considering the possible contamination. Also, we have to account for the fact that this is a resort with guests coming and going all the time. There were also crowds of people ascending onto the apartment, either searchers just voluntarily coming to help, or people trying to get a look at the big case everyone was talking about in the news. We do know police took samples from the bedroom, and by June 1st, only one sample could not be attributed to any known person. So it wasn't any member of the group, staff, police. And this is what they call the stranger DNA. And to this day, this stranger DNA has not been identified. But let's talk about the first named suspect. This guy named Robert Murat lived at his mom's house about 150 yards from apartment 5A. It wasn't the proximity that brought him into focus, though. It was the fact that a journalist told police that Robert was asking about the case. Robert Murat was a familiar name to the police, though. He had signed up as an official interpreter during the searches. So we have proximity, and we also have a guy that appeared to possibly have been inserting himself into the investigation, something we've seen before. Perpetrators will constantly check media coverage, talk to the police, even join searches to figure out how close police are to them. Or sometimes they do these things to revel in the misery and pain they've caused. Once police started to look into Robert Murat, they showed a picture of him to the vacation group, and three of those people, Fiona, Russell, and Rachel, said that they saw Robert outside apartment 5A shortly after Madeline's disappearance.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Nanny at the resort and two other vacationers also said they saw Robert there. Which, okay, he lived there. There's all this commotion going on. Listen, if I see police sirens or I hear police sirens, I'm walking outside my house to see what's going on.
1000%.
Absolutely. But
we're also nosy bitches.
Maybe Robert's a little nosy. I don't know.
Right. Because I know I could name a few people who would hear the sirens and be like, absolutely not. Lock my doors. Don't look outside. Us up in the scene.
You know, there's like TikToks of the guys like and girls like vacuuming their front lawn while cops are outside in their neighbor's house. That's us.
That's us. Yeah.
But this was enough for police. They thought he was weird. So they searched his house on May 15th. They drained the pool. Searched his car, examined all his electronics, used ground radar and cadaver dogs, and questioned two of his friends. It ended up being a dead end. Robert Murat was officially cleared of any involvement on July 21st, 2008. Robert was later awarded a large sum of money after successfully suing several media organizations for libel in 2008. Despite this and being cleared, Robert was questioned again in 2014 by Scotland Yard. Robert and his mother maintained that he had nothing to do with Madeline's disappearance and he was home all night. Which brings us to the part in the story you've probably been waiting for, if you know this case, even in the slightest, and that is the suspicion that Jerry and Kate McCann were involved in their daughter's disappearance. At a press conference in Berlin, a journalist straight up asked Jerry and Kate if they were involved, and it was the first time this suspicion had been voiced publicly, and it kind of just opened the floodgates. All of a sudden, the press all across Europe started running stories about how Jerry and Kate murdered their own daughter and that the entire vacation group, the top of seven, were all involved in the cover-up. The press even started running stories about how the group were a bunch of swingers, which no evidence of that, by the way. They pointed out that there were inconsistencies in everyone's stories and theorized that Jane Tanner's sighting of that guy carrying a young girl in pajamas was made up. Now, there were inconsistencies in the stories told. I'm going to go over them, but I do want to point out that people's stories change over time. Whether someone remembers something later or just forgot something due to time, it's not necessarily a sign of guilt or lying. Another point is the fact that, according to Kate McCann, when the group was being interviewed, so the police would speak to them in Portuguese, and there would be an interpreter there that would talk to those being interviewed in English and then translate it back to Portuguese for the police. So then their statements were typed up in Portuguese, translated back into English verbally. So the interpreter would read what was said on the statement, and then whoever was being interviewed would sign the statement. So TLDR, whoever was being interviewed had no real idea of what was typed up and what they signed.
Crazy.
I doubt anyone's going to be in a similar circumstance, but yeah. Get it on paper in English as well.
Come on, people.
Anyways, the first big inconsistency involved Dad Jerry McCann. In his first interview on May 4th, Jerry said the couple entered apartment 5A through the locked front door during their checks at 9:05 p.m. and 10 p.m. But in a later interview on May 10th, he said he had entered through the patio doors at the back, which had been left unlocked so the parents could move easily between the apartment and the restaurant. There was also confusion about whether the front door had been locked at all. Later, Jerry explained that earlier in the week, they had used the front door, but because it was next to the children's bedroom, they had switched to using the patio doors instead, so they didn't want to wake them up. Investigators also questioned Kate's actions when she discovered Madeline was missing. Rather than calling the group on her phone or shouting from the balcony, she had run directly to the Tapas restaurant, leaving the twins alone in the apartment. Another key point of debate involved the exterior shutter over Madeline's bedroom window. So the shutter, it's metal slats, it's on this roller, and it's controlled by a strap inside the room. So once lowered, it's locked into place outside the window and can only be raised using the interior strap. So allegedly cannot be opened from the outside. Kate said the window and shutter were closed when Madeline was put to bed, but open when she discovered her daughter was missing. Jerry later told police that after he was alerted, he lowered the shutter from the inside. He then went outside and discovered that it could be raised from the outside. But Portuguese police said the shutter could not be raised from the outside without forcing it, and there were no signs of forced entry. They also noted that forcing it would likely have created a significant noise and that the twins would have woken up. These discrepancies fed a growing belief among investigators that there had been no abduction. Kate's initial cry, "They've taken her," was viewed with suspicion by some officers as if she had been trying to reinforce the idea of an abduction. By August, a darker theory had begun to circulate within parts of the Portuguese investigation team. According to that theory, Madeline had died accidentally inside apartment 5A, possibly after being sedated to help her sleep. Investigators speculated that her parents might have hidden the body for a period of time before later transporting it elsewhere in a rental car that they had rented 3 weeks after her disappearance. I have no idea how they came to this conclusion so quickly. So now the police are looking at the McCanns. They've pivoted from a stranger abduction and also from Madeline just walking off. But either way, Madeline was still missing. They had to find her in order to determine what truly happened, so the searches continued. The McCanns brought up something weird, though, which just made investigators look at them more. On June 28, 2007, they asked the Portuguese police to contact this police officer in South Africa named Danny Krugel. And Danny Krugel claimed to have this device that could locate missing people. Get this, guys. You would insert the missing person's DNA into the device, and using satellites, the satellites would find the missing person.
Wow, that's groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Via DNA through satellites. I don't, it sounds like BS because it is. It does right. Not work.
Yeah. I mean, maybe like in the far, 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 far future.
We all have chips in our arms or something.
Yeah.
Everyone put an AirTag in.
COVID vaccine. Cut that out.
But family back in England sent Madeline's hair and eyelashes from the family home to Danny Krugel. I don't know where they got the eyelashes from, but okay. So Krugel got to the area on July 15th and claimed his device detected a static signal near Rocha Negra, a cliff on the beach. The area was searched, but nothing. Obviously, the Portuguese police think this was all BS, but they also interpreted the whole situation as a ploy. The lead investigator, who thought the McCanns were involved, thought that this whole thing was an attempt to kind of reveal Madeline's location without directly implicating themselves. Kind of like, maybe you should look over here, knowing she would be there sort of thing, without the perpetrator directly leading them there.
Yeah, I could see that.
With not much to go off of and a suspicion that Jerry and Kate did something to Madeline, The authorities in Portugal sent a letter to the British police asking for assistance in searching. The British National Policing Improvement Agency sent down Mark Harrison, the national search advisor. He reviewed the search areas, walked the terrain, and even surveyed the region from a helicopter. In his report dated July 23, 2007, Harrison wrote that roughly 100 officers had searched an area extending up to 9.3 miles around the town. But he noticed something troubling. Aside from a search and rescue team from Lisbon, most of the officers involved had little or no formal training in search procedures. Search dogs had been used, but only after 5 days, which was far later than recommended. So Harrison recommended expanding the search to include the beach, nearby open land, Robert Murat's property, again, apartment 5A itself, the apartments used by the top of 7, and any vehicles rented by them. He also suggested bringing in 2 highly trained sniffer dogs, and their names were Keela and Eddie, and we love them, obviously. Keela was trained to detect human blood. When she found it, she gave what handlers call a passive alert, placing her nose close to the source and freezing in position. Eddie was different. He was an enhanced victim recovery dog, a cadaver dog trained to detect the scent of human remains. He could identify the scent even if the body had been buried, burned, or submerged in water. And Eddie was trained to bark only when detecting that specific scent. The dogs arrived on July 31st, 2007, and were taken to search apartment 5A, nearby wasteland, and the beach. In the apartment, both Keela and Eddie alerted behind the couch in the living room. Eddie also alerted near the wardrobe in the main bedroom where Jerry and Kate had been sleeping. Neither dog alerted to anything in the wasteland or on the beach. Police then got search warrants to search the house and a car that the McCanns rented after the disappearance, since they had been staying nearby during the searches. On August 2nd, the dogs were brought into the house, and Eddie alerted one time when he encountered Madeline's stuffed toy, the cuddle cat, that was in the living room. Police collected numerous items, clothing, the cuddle cat, latex gloves, suitcases, notepad, 2 diaries, and a Bible. So inside the Bible was a marked passage from the book of Samuel about the death of David's child. Investigators copied the passage into their case file along with a Portuguese translation. Now, all the reports say it was like marked. It's photocopied in the case file. I didn't see a single mark or highlight. I don't know if it's just it's like a black and white photocopy, but to them, they're like, oh, parents obviously reading the Bible about the death of a child. Obviously, they killed her. That was their assumption. But later, when all of the items taken from the home were moved to another location, Eddie alerted to one of the boxes containing clothing. A source close to the McCann's lawyer suggested there could be an innocent explanation. Kate had previously worked as a family doctor and could have come into contact with corpses during her medical career. I don't know.
I feel like that's something weird to say. Like, you're like, that's either a yes or a no. It's not might have.
Also, my assumption, if you're a family doctor, general practitioner, you're not dealing with many deaths or corpses in the office.
At all.
But the suspicions continue to grow. On August 6th, the dogs Keela and Eddie were taken to an underground parking garage across from the Portuguese police headquarters. So they had 10 vehicles parked there, including the McCann's rental car and one belonging to Robert Murat. Eddie alerted outside the McCann's car at the driver's side door. The following morning, Keela alerted inside the vehicle's trunk and in the map compartment of the driver's door, which is where the key and key ring for the car were placed. When the key ring was hidden in a bucket of sand, she alerted again. And when the bucket was moved to a different floor of the parking garage, she alerted for a third time. Hairs and fibers found in apartment 5A and in the car were sent to a lab in England for analysis. But before the DNA results were even in, police summoned the McCanns to a meeting at their headquarters. And the Portuguese investigators called them in to essentially tell them that they abandoned the abduction theory. They told the McCanns that the case was now being treated as a murder investigation, and they were being questioned as the primary suspects. And you'll have to tune in next week for part 2 to hear what went down next.
Oh, dang.
Damn, Kylie!
Leave him hanging.
Oh my god, I was not expecting for it to end right there.
I had to end part 1 on a cliffhanger.
Wow. What do we think about with dogs alerting more than once to something? Like, I know some people, like, don't believe in it at all.
I mean, like, Keela alerting to the key ring 3 times in 3 different locations. That's got to be something.
Got to be something.
Yeah.
Also, they brought in, like, the top of the top dogs.
Right. It's not like they just took Finley.
No, Finley would be sniffing and alerting to everything. No offense, Finley. Yeah.
Listeners, Finley's my dog, and he doesn't have much going on upstairs for him.
Very special boy.
He's a special boy. But yeah, like, I don't... There had to have been something that Keela alerted to multiple times, you know? Like, it's not... At that point, it's not a coincidence.
Yeah, and so she was a dog that was trained to alert for blood. So she alerted behind the couch and the key ring. The thing is, though, is, okay, the apartment that they're in, that's rented. Every week, there's a different family there. The car, also rented. You know, there's a lot of possibilities. I've bled places. We've all bled different places.
Yeah. That's just like, well, no, I was going to say that's just like hair, but it's not, because hair is actually like much stronger than that. But blood in general, I totally understand that. I think it's always a good idea, though, that the family's looked at first, obviously, you know.
It is statistically more likely to be a family member when a child is murdered, but we can't close all the other doors. All right. Do you want to jump into overtime?
Sure. Good job, Kylie.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, there was, okay, you know what I need to start doing? I have really bad, so like when you give birth and when you have kids, little kids, you have mom brain, but like, I swear it gets worse with the more kids that you have. Cause now I can't remember anything, but I need to start making a list of things to talk to you guys about throughout the day. Cause I'll see something and I'll be like, oh my God, we need to talk about this on the podcast. And then I'll forget by the time we get to the podcast. I just remembered as I was talking. Okay.
On that note, I've been doing that.
Have you?
I need to start doing it for the podcast, but me and the boyfriend, we meet up for wine out on the dock every night and we gossip. So I've been keeping a little gossip journal, a little dock agenda.
First of all, I can't believe you said boyfriend. That like melts my heart. Second of all, is Lufa out there with you?
Mr. Lufa is out there on the dock with us.
Amazing. Wonderful. Lufa got us in trouble today, but alas. Oh, Holly doesn't know about this.
No, what?
Oh my gosh. So here, oh yeah, here's some drama. Let us know if we're in the wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Kate and her whole family meet the boyfriend and the boyfriend's dog. We stayed at Airbnb when we went and saw Holly 2 weeks ago. And then 15 days ago from recording, Kate got a 5-star review as a guest. We were there for one night, you guys. And then I see we get a message this morning from the cleaning company that there's a $300 fee for excessive dog hair, as they described.
Yeah. They messaged this morning, the owners of the Airbnb. It's like a rental company that they use. And they said, hey, just letting you know, because you guys brought a dog that we were unaware of, it's a pet-friendly Airbnb. Let me just say this, first of all. It's listed as pet-friendly. I read through all the reviews. I mean, reviews, and I read through their contract, because I always do. Now, I will say, if you read through the contract, it talks about how they don't want dogs basically on anything, or like pets on anything. But like, it's that, what are you going to do? Stop a dog from going on? Like, it said no bedding, no towels, no linens, no couches, no rugs, no carpets. I mean, it was excessive, but it's a pet friendly place. Now, we go to the Airbnb. There was always a chance that one dog was going to come. The dog came, was wonderful. Short to medium hair coat. Okay. So not even like a long haired dog. Didn't sleep on the bed. There were no carpets in the house. It didn't get on any sheets or towels. The only thing the dog got on was a couch. Okay. In one particular place. It's been 15 days since we checked out of that Airbnb, and they messaged today and said, basically, like, hey, you owe us, here's a bill for $300 because of excessive pet hair.
We have yet to receive any photos of this excessive dog hair. And they said
that we requested.
That they had to hire a professional cleaning company to use specialized equipment to clean the couch. Where's the receipt from this
specialized equipment? I bet that was called a lint roller.
No, but I messaged, like, you know me, in the nicest way possible, because I was like, I really, and I feel like Kylie can vouch for me. I was like, look, I understand what you guys are saying, but because I read all your rules and whatnot, you shouldn't list this as a pet-friendly home if you're going to charge people $300 if you find pet hair. Like, there, that's just ridiculous. Like, $100 maybe if it wasn't pet friendly. But like, if you guys are pet friendly, you're gonna find dog hair. That's just how it is. There's no way a cleaning company charged you $300. It doesn't cost someone to clean my house for $300, you know? Oh. And it wasn't deep ingrained hair. Yeah. So we've been going back and forth with the Airbnb people. And basically they said, like, they basically told us that they sent in a claim against us, and Airbnb will let us know what they think. And so I'm over here telling Kylie, just pay the fee, just pay the fee. And Kylie's like, nope, not paying the fee.
It's not even about the money. Obviously the boyfriend will pay the $300 if they say that we need to pay the $300. It's the principal. I want receipts.
Yes.
I want photographic evidence.
And we asked for it too. We said, do you guys have photos and receipts of what's going on? And they basically were like, it was in the contract. You can't have, you know, the cleaning company did it. They charged us. You have to pay for it.
Here's another thing. I'm tired of showing up at Airbnbs that they lock away, like, the vacuum and the cleaning supplies.
There were no vacuum for us. There was no.
No. If I saw a pile of dog hair, I would have vacuumed it up if I had a fucking vacuum.
Right.
I'm with you. That's wrong and crazy.
Look, I understand now, looking back on it. They said no dog on the couch. The dog was on the couch. Okay, charge me $50. All right, whatever. But like $300?
The dog does not have a job. We're working on it, guys.
Talk with the blog.
Can we also talk really quick, girls, since you can see Andy? She's losing her hair.
Oh, no. Get She's that baby balding? Some Rogaine. She's
balding. So this happens with blonde babies, not brunettes usually, but she got like cradle cap and her hair's just falling out. Like, I can go like this and it just pulls out hair. But look at the back of her head's fine.
A little.
No, the back of it, like right here.
Oh, yes. Right there. Yeah.
But then the rest of it, she's balding. It's so bad. But there's not, you can't do anything about it. It grows bad.
Yeah.
It's just,
I figured.
It's just like I go in public and I put a bow or a hat on. So she's not embarrassed.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed for her.
I knew you would say something, Kylie. I knew you would.
I'm kidding. I love how people watching on YouTube are just, we're just having like a baby show and tell.
It's fine. It's okay.
No. Like and subscribe if you like that baby.
Yeah. And if you don't, we'll find you. Also, are we in the wrong for the Airbnb? I'm just throwing it out there. I want to know.
Yeah. Let us know if we're being crazy.
I mean, I think in a way, yes, but also in a way, no. Like, I get where they're coming from, but it's not $300 to lint roll that couch.
Right.
You could say is like, they could be like, okay, well, at this Airbnb, like, we're pet friendly to people with pet allergies and stuff, but we're not pet friendly because we accommodate to people with pet allergies. But in this case, if they have an Airbnb where they say it's pet friendly, then you can't justify that.
Well, that's what I'm worried about, is that in this case, because the Airbnb itself was not fancy. There was a lot of cheap stuff all over the place.
Right.
I wouldn't stay there for a week. Let's just say that. Like, it was great for a night. This is all happening. Also, why is it taking 15 days for you guys to now tell us that the cleaning happened? And they were like, oh, well, we had a case against it, blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, shit, I forgot mid-sentence what I was going to say. See, this is what happens, Andy.
So the cleaning company sent some claims to, I guess, their boss or something, and it took forever to, like, process. But then, like, the actual owner and, like, host of the Airbnb had no idea about it. I don't know.
Right. And so it's been 15 days, and also, God damn it, I keep forgetting right when I'm about to say it. Oh, okay, it's been 15 days, and we've already done reviews for each other, and I mentioned that to them as well. I said, I gave you guys a 5-star review. You gave me a 5-star review. So what if they've been doing this to every single person that's brought a pet, and nobody knows because all the reviews are fantastic?
Yeah, we can't change them after the fact.
Reviews.
Yeah, I see.
Because if I hadn't written a review yet, I would have wrote in there, like, just by the way, I don't recommend bringing a pet, you know, like, or something like
that.
And if you're going to charge $300, put that in the fucking contract. Like, if I was reading that contract thinking like, oh, maybe we'll get charged $50, not $300.
Reheated, send thoughts and prayers. If this does not go our way, we don't get this at least reduced, and just out of the principle and the fact that I'm mad, we will be posting a link to the Airbnb and we will be doxing them.
Yeah, spamming. And I'm probably going to get my Airbnb canceled, which is my worst fear. So
that's not going to happen.
Okay. You better make sure, attorney.
We won't let that happen to you.
Thank you.
You have two free attorneys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pro bono.
All right, guys. We're going to go read up on some Airbnb law, but we'll see you next week with part two of the Madeline McCann story. Make sure you like, subscribe, follow so you get the notification when it drops. Like, subscribe, follow all the things on social media too. And goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Andy, can you say bye?
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.